It's the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer, Frank Arcuri, typically, but Derek's not here today. He's in Binghamton for a wedding, and he's also kind of not feeling good. So, Frank Arcuri here by myself, technically.
You're never alone, Frank.
I'm never alone. I'm never alone, because I have two guests today. You just heard Louis DiBiase.
What's up,
back
Frank?
Again. And back again as well, Brayton Wilson from WGR.
Hi.
Just a nice little hi from Brayton.
Don't need much to introduce yourself sometimes.
Usually don't. So, few things going to talk about before the NFL draft, which is Thursday, which WGR Sports Radio 550 will be covering.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be very, very fun indeed.
Especially if they draft Josh Allen.
Oh.
Now you're just looking for trouble there.
The phone calls at 3:30 a.m. are going to be wild.
This is the podcast where we're not going to talk about the draft, because little preview, Derek and I are going to be doing a full draft coverage on the next one, which is Wednesday, the day before.
Shameless plug.
Yes. So we're not going to talk about the draft unless there's some little snippets, unless there's some big news that comes out. We're going to talk about the other stuff real quick. We got the NBA playoffs going on right now. We got the NHL playoffs going on. The NFL schedule just got released. You know, there's a little snippets about that. But let's start with the NBA playoffs. Last night, the Pelicans sweep the Trailblazers. And I brought Louis on because he's the basketball guy around here. And Louis, what do you think about that?
I picked the Pelicans in 7 games.
Right.
I have been on board with New Orleans since August, just based on, it wasn't even this team that they have now. It's Boogie Cousins was also there. They got in the trade from Sacramento last year. And when you have Anthony Davis and Boogie, two of the best bigs in the game, two guys that can ball handle, shoot threes, dominate in the low post, That's a team to me that even in a stacked Western Conference was going to do some damage. And what's incredible is what they've done without DeMarcus Cousins and with Drew Holiday, who is showing the NBA that he is one of the most underrated players in the league with 41 points yesterday. And then Frank, Playoff Rondo. Playoff Rondo is vintage.
Playoff Rondo,
it's fantastic.
It's just amazing.
It's some of the most vintage Rondo stat line in game 3.
Yeah.
Heading into the third quarter, he had only 2 points, but he had 14 assists. Like they know, they honestly have been playing better without Cousins. They're a faster paced offense. Holiday and Rondo complement each other very well. Holiday's great off the ball, good 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
And Anthony Davis is just dominant. He is showing the league. And, you know, I don't think he gets the love. Maybe, you know, most analysts have him as a top 5, top 7 player in the NBA. But because he's in New Orleans, not a lot of people watch the Pelicans as much as they probably should. So mm-hmm. I don't think him and Kawhi Leonard, too, for different reasons, don't really get the recognition as the elite stars that they are, just based on different factors. And for Anthony Davis, the market, but on these national TV games, he is dominating, especially a team in Portland that was one of the most hot teams in the second half of the season with Damian Lillard and McCollum, one of the best backcourts in the NBA. And they just absolutely locked him down. It was defense. Drew Holiday's performance on Damian Lillard defensively in this playoffs was that of an elite point guard, and they're going to do some damage still. They're not done. They're probably going to play Golden State here in the second round, barring that Houston actually gets over Minnesota. So the Pelicans are a scary matchup. You don't want to play this team right now in the second round of the playoffs. And another guy, Nikola Mirotic, who is the replacement of DeMarcus Cousins they got from the Bulls at the trade deadline, he is a perfect fit. He is a great, you know, wing defender. He's a really good 3-point shooter. The Pelicans are a scary team, Frank. I didn't expect them to sweep Portland because, again, the Trailblazers were one of the best teams in the second half in the NBA.
At one point, they just dominated. The Trailblazers won the top in the West.
Yeah, I mean, they were the 3 seed in the Western Conference. That's huge considering who's in the West with a team like New Orleans is the 6 seed.
Yeah.
You know, you got the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Rockets, the Warriors, even the Minnesota Timberwolves are the 8 seed.
Yeah.
And they have 3 players you could argue are in the top 30 mm-hmm. of the league with Jimmy Butler, Karl Anthony Towns, and Andrew Wiggins. So Portland had an impressive season and New Orleans just dominated them.
And
this is huge, Frank, because people are calling for just an uproar now in Portland. They're calling for a reboot, maybe trade McCollum or Lillard to try to reset this and get better. But they're in cap purgatory right now. They handed out massive contracts to Nurkic, to McCollum, and Lillard. So this is a situation where Portland's almost stuck in mediocrity, where They're a team where you know can be a consistent playoff team every year, but you pretty much know they're never going to be a title contender. So this series was way more one-sided than I anticipated. I still had New Orleans going into the second round because I think they have the most underrated backcourt in the NBA, but I didn't expect this kind of whooping.
Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday last night combined for 88 points.
It kind of reminded me of the Kyrie Irving, LeBron James Game 5 in the NBA Finals back in 2016,
yeah,
where they both put up 40-plus to get the win in Golden State,
yeah,
to advance it to Game 6. It was one of those kind of nights where two players just took over a game. And again, Drew Holiday is putting himself on the map. I don't think people anticipated him being this good, especially in the postseason. You know, Holiday has shown now he's a top 10, top 15 point guard in this game.
Who, as of right now, based on what you've seen in the playoffs, besides, you know, what the Pelicans have done, has there been another team that's been just as impressive,
mm-hmm,
or even more impressive to you?
Philadelphia and the 76ers in the Eastern Conference.
I figured you would say that.
They're up 3-1 right now, yeah, on the Miami Heat, and this is a team with two of the faces of the future in the NBA, and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
And how this team keeps coming back. This has been this is a series that you would see in the 80s or the 90s with how chippy it's been, with some of the scrimmages and the fights that have happened in the past few games.
Emotion.
And you would think a team with young stars like Philadelphia that can get in their head and they'd be pressing to make plays and, you know, they get caught up in all the drama, and Philly is just so reserved and they just don't let it distract them on the court. And a lot of that has to do with their head coach, Brett Brown, who to me is a sleeper for coach of the year. Brad Stevens is probably going to win it, but he's been incredible. They kept him throughout all the tanking and throughout the process, if you will. The first process, before Sean McDermott's process, there was a process over in Philly with Sam Hinkie.
Philly kind of started
They started the process. And the way, two incredibly tough road wins in Miami.
Yeah.
This Heat team is gritty. They remind me almost of the 04-05 Pistons with a little less star power, because that's the thing. The way the Heat thrive is based on coaching with Eric Spoelstra, another coach of the year candidate, and just hard defense with Dragic and Justice Winslow, who to me has had a pretty dirty series, honestly, stepping on Joel Embiid's mask in Game 3. But They're a gritty team, and they're a team that Philly, that's a tough matchup for a young team in the first round, and they have handled it incredibly. Ben Simmons had a triple-double last night. He's only the second rookie to ever notch a triple-double in the playoffs, and Magic Johnson was the other one, and he was hitting fadeaway jumpers. He looks like a guy that's going to take over this league quickly if he hasn't already. So Philly and New Orleans to me have been the most impressive. That's the finals I'm hoping for. I don't expect it, but
imagine that as a final. I doubt it would happen, but
yeah. And it's their bench players, Frank, too.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, two guys that Atlanta bought out in January, and Philly picks them up, and Bellinelli's been one of their best players, and so is Ilyasova, drawing charges, doing all the dirty work, hitting threes. This team has a collection of young stars and incredibly experienced veteran role players like J.J. Redick and Robert Covington, and now Bellinelli and Ersan. So Philly and New Orleans are dangerous right now, and they're teams you don't want to play in the second round.
Marco Fultz, too, who was the first overall pick last year, has been looking a lot better after coming back from his injury, hasn't he?
He had a good final 14 games of the season, and in Game 1, I thought he did some good things, but Brett Brown's kind of held him out in Game 2 and 3 just based on he looks lost out there in such a...
Right.
Because, you know, things close up in the playoffs. You see it in hockey, too.
Yeah.
Things tighten up. Defense gets stronger, and Marco Fultz really looked lost, and he doesn't have that jumper down yet. His form is still not there quite yet. So he's having more difficulty getting to the hole than a guy like Ben Simmons is, because Ben Simmons is 6'10", and he's one of the best passers in the game already.
Right.
So, and they're going to give him space. Fultz, 6'3", smaller. His form just simply is not down yet. He looks a little lost right now against a Heat team that's defense is one of the better in the league. So Fultz has been good, but they're more relying on Ben Simmons right now more than ever.
That would make sense. That would make sense. Yeah, Sixers.
But he's only 19 years old.
He's only 19.
People got to put that into perspective.
Yeah, he's still so young. Mm-hmm. It's the same. It is definitely the same thing in
hockey.
But Sixers look primed to go to round two, and then they're probably looking at a matchup against Boston in the second round, and that's a series. I mean, and Boston's without Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving.
I wouldn't count that out, but that's a series
that can go either way because the Celtics have just been looking great.
I wouldn't count out Milwaukee just yet. They're down 2-1, but
yeah.
Game 3 in Milwaukee was a dominant performance. Milwaukee has underperformed all year. With the talented players they have, and a guy in Giannis Antetokounmpo, we talked about Ben Simmons eventually taking over this league.
Yeah.
The Greek Freak also is taking over. He's only 23 years old, and when he has a supporting cast of Jabari Parker, a former second overall pick, a Chris Middleton, who's one of the better shooters in the game, you traded for Eric Bledsoe from Phoenix. This team should be so much better than it is, and they showed what they can do against Boston. Honestly, Milwaukee should have been favored to win this series, but because of the lack of coaching and just the sloppy offense, they simply aren't. But game three might be a sign of things to come. Game four is huge. If Milwaukee takes game four, I expect the Bucks to win this series. I picked them in seven games to move on to the second round.
Okay.
And keep an eye out for Milwaukee. That's a team that if they figure things out on the offensive side, if Jabari Parker plays as good as he did in game three, that team and Philadelphia are dangerous. Well, Frank, I don't think LeBron's getting out of the East this year. I think this is the first year in a long time LeBron's not playing in the NBA Finals.
This may very well might be, especially because the Cavs are down 2-1 in the series against Indiana.
He might not even get out of the first round. This is the Cavaliers.
This is probably the worst Cavs team in the playoffs in like
this is worse
10
than the 2000. You look at the 2007 team that made the finals against the Spurs.
Yeah,
this team is worse than that.
Yeah,
and. Look, I understand that Isaiah Thomas had to get traded. He was a cancer in the locker room.
Yeah, he wasn't a fit.
Dwayne Wade wanted to go back to Miami. He wasn't happy with the situation, probably because of IT. But they traded away, you know, Jay Crowder, who's played really well in Utah in this playoff series. They're up 2-1 on OKC a lot because of Crowder's shooting and his defense. And you got rid of Iman Shumpert. You got rid of a lot of playoff experience. Even Derrick Rose. Frank, Derrick Rose had 17 points yesterday off the bench in Minnesota. These are all players Cleveland could desperately use right now that have playoff experience that they got rid of all of them.
Yeah.
And I started thinking back yesterday, watching Derrick Rose in Minnesota, the Cavaliers might have made a mistake. It might have been better for the regular season to get guys like Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood, but this team needs that playoff experience, and outside of LeBron and J.R. Smith, they have none of it. This isn't a team trying to get to their, you know, fourth straight NBA Finals. That's LeBron James, but this team is not experienced in the playoffs, and it's young, and it's simply too inconsistent, where a tough team like the Pacers, that's a hard out in the first round. I don't know if LeBron's getting past it. He had to absolutely take over in game two just to win by two.
LeBron's also a free agent at the end of the year. Or is he expected to?
He's going
to
be a free agent.
There's been the talk. Yeah, there's been the talk about that. And especially if the Cavs don't get out of the first round, that talk about LeBron leaving again,
I think
that's going to intensify. And it may very well be true. I remember hearing all the rumors last year that this was going to be his last year in Cleveland, and he was going to sign with a team like the Lakers to go along with Paul George at the end of the season.
I think he's going to be gone. I think this is the last year, especially if they lose in the first round. LeBron is getting, you know, he's in his 30s now, and you would think eventually he'd start slowing down. It's kind of like Tom Brady in the NFL.
Yeah.
He keeps getting better with age, and I think LeBron's eventually going to, he's going to know, his window eventually is going to close, and he's probably going to go to a team like Houston and team up with Chris Paul and James Harden, or maybe a Philadelphia and play with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, although I don't see the fit with Simmons and LeBron. It, you know, star power is star power. If you have that many talented players, it's going to work regardless. You know, Westbrook and Durant weren't really the perfect fit. But, you know, a lot of people say Westbrook can't play with stars, but he's been to four Western Conference Finals and an NBA Finals with star players. So eventually talent just, you know, oversteps everything else. But Cleveland, enjoy LeBron because this is probably the last year for.
Oof, he's got to go
team. You have to go team up with stars. You would have thought maybe he could get by in the past in the Eastern Conference without these super teams, but now with a team like Philadelphia emerging,
now he might not be able to.
And
too.
If Milwaukee eventually gets better with this talent that they have, he might not be even be able to get out of the East without two other All Star players.
Yeah, it just shows how poor the East was. You know, 10 years ago where LeBron was pretty much by himself and he could get to the finals.
And maybe he wants to take advantage of that still. Maybe that's why he joins a team like Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah. But now you got all these teams who are building these super teams.
Mm-hmm.
And And now you need that. Now you need the help. And if it's not in the, with the team you're on now, you got to go somewhere else. And you, and now LeBron's got that opportunity to do it.
Absolutely. I think the Cavs, I still think they're going to get through Indiana here, but they've got to get some production out of Clarkson, out of Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood, to me, is probably the second best offensive player on this team. And look, they need Kevin Love to step up. Kevin Love is supposed to be an all-star player in the NBA, and he had a good game three. He only had two shots in the second half. You've got to get him more shots. Ty Lue has done an awful coaching job this year for the Cavaliers. It's you know, we talk about how much of an impact Popovich has on the Spurs and Brad Stevens has on the Celtics, and you just don't see that in Cleveland with Ty Lue. There's no offensive or defensive structure on this team, and you got to get Kevin Love more than two shots if you want to beat the Pacers. He's your other, I guess you can consider him, I don't really consider him a star player in the league anymore, just based on his limitations, but you got to get Kevin Love more than two shots, one of which was, you know, a prayer with, like, a minute left in the at the end of the fourth quarter when he hit that three to pull within three. You know, Kevin Love's got to get more than two shots in the second half. But I think Cleveland eventually will get through this one. But Frank, I don't think they're getting out of the East.
A lot of interesting storylines in the NBA playoffs right now. Yeah, Cavs down 2-1. You got the Raptors up 2-1 on the Wizards. You got Golden State up 3-0 on the Spurs. Those are games that are happening tonight as well. Houston's up 2-1 on Minnesota. And the Jazz are up 2-1 on OKC.
That's a battle of two different philosophies in basketball. It's just star power versus a team unit.
Yeah, and the Thunder are a team that you like as well.
Absolutely. And with Paul George, Westbrook, and Melo, this team has underperformed all year, much like Milwaukee has in the East.
Yeah.
You know, they're still the 4 seed, but the Thunder last night had no answer for Ricky Rubio on the defensive side. This is another team that's really held back by their coaching, and Billy Donovan has no idea what he's doing on the offensive side. And the Thunder now are down 2-1, and Donovan Mitchell's playing incredible. He's probably the best pure rookie I've seen in a long time. You know, Ben Simmons is technically a rookie, but, you know, he had all last year. I still consider him a rookie because this is his first year playing.
Yeah, it's actually his first year.
But there is an advantage to practicing with a team and watching film with an NBA franchise.
Always.
He has more of an advantage than Donovan Mitchell. I'm still taking Simmons to win Rookie of the Year, but nonetheless, Utah is another complete team that, you know, coached by Snyder, who I consider the Brad Stevens of the West. This team is another one that's scary to play in the second round. They have Defensive Player of the Year Rudy Gobert absolutely taking out Steven Adams. OKC's got to get this win in Utah for game four. And
they need it.
Paul George has not played well since that game one domination that gave him the nickname Playoff P. You know, he's got to step up here, and I still had the Thunder. I actually had the Thunder getting to the Western Conference Finals, but they have to get more production from Westbrook and Paul George. In game two, the three stars, the big three, went 0-14 in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. Their fourth quarter performances have not been ideal. And a lot of that's on coaching, but the stars got to find their shots.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the NHL playoffs. I know that's a lot of good NBA talk. Louis, you're the best with this stuff. Brayton, got to get you in now for the hockey stuff.
Hi.
We saw Tampa Bay move on against New Jersey in 5 games. Kind of a no surprise there. Tampa just looked way too good. They, you know, they're probably the most one of the most complete teams in the NHL. But I think the big surprise was San Jose sweeping the Ducks. What'd you think about that?
I mean, I wasn't entirely surprised. I thought that could have gone 7 games, but I still think San Jose was the better team out of the two.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, John Gibson was kind of banged up at the end of the year, and Anaheim's defense just doesn't look the same as they did last year. Mm-hmm. And I mean, San Jose, with the addition of Evander Kane, looks like a totally different team. They look more offensive. They look more threatening.
Yep.
And Martin Jones looks like the Martin Jones that he was in the Stanley Cup final back in, you know, 2016 now?
Yeah, no, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. It's already insane how that's gone there. But, I mean, San Jose just looks like the better team. And, I mean, if I'm San Jose or if I'm Vegas heading into the second round, I'm kind of nervous about what San Jose could possibly do.
That's going to be a fun series.
Should be a fun series.
I think that's going to be a fun series no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless if that's a sweep or a 5-game series, that's one where all the games are going to be close. And you're going to see a lot of back and forth action, fast paced, a lot of scoring chances. The goalies are going to have to come up huge in that.
The thing that's different about both teams is San Jose can score.
Yeah.
San Jose scored a lot of goals in the series, where Vegas, they didn't really score all that much.
No,
they need to put some pucks on goal and put the pucks in the net.
They were lucky to face a team like LA who always has had trouble scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And because they only scored, what was it, 7 goals in 4 games? It was 2-1-0.
There were 2-1-0 games, which
one was a 3-1, and I think the other one was a 2-1.
2-1, yeah, 2-1 overtime. The double overtime, was 2-1.
Yeah, the double OT game.
Yeah, I mean, with San Jose and Vegas, I mean, Vegas has to find a way to put the puck in the net, because if they don't, San Jose can score.
Yep.
And they've shown it already in these playoffs that they will put the puck on net at will, and they will score as much as they can. And, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury is going to have a tough test at hand, because if he can stand on his head, Vegas will certainly have a chance. But if they can't score, they can't shoot the puck, and, you know,
I think
San Jose continues to do what they did in the first round, this series could be over quite easily.
I think if the lower
I still think it's going to go seven, but it's certainly not a series that could favor the Golden Knights if they can't score.
I think the lower scoring the series is, the better it is for Vegas.
Certainly.
And it's likely going to be a goalie duel, though. That's really what's going to come down to. I'm with you, Fleury. If he stands on his head and the scoring stays low, Vegas has got a huge chance to win that series.
Right. And you look at,
I don't know if that'll happen.
You look at the talent that San Jose has on that team.
Yeah.
And
imagine what's going to happen when they get Thornton back.
Right. Exactly. San Jose has a lot more notable high-end talent than Vegas has. And I mean, Vegas has been the darlings of the NHL this year in their very first year. And it's great to see that they're doing well. But at the same time, who's going to step up for them and score? Is it going to be James Neal? Is it going to be Eric Halla? Is it going to be Alex Tuck? Is it going to be
Marchessault?
Yeah, Riley Smith. Who
William
on defense
Carlson.
Is going to be able to step up and be solid on the back end?
Because like
their defense has no big names. Where San Jose, a lot of their defense has
two really good ones. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, their defense will have to stand up for sure for Vegas. And if they don't, San Jose is just going to roll over them. And it's going to be between Marc-Andre Fleury and, you know, Martin Jones at this point. But I mean, I pick San Jose to win this series from the start. I think they're still going to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think that San Jose is just a well-rounded team than Vegas is. But Vegas will certainly put up a fight. I think it's going to go 6 or 7 games. But,
absolutely.
You know, they got to find a way to score. Vegas does.
I had San Jose in the West Final from the start as well.
As did I.
Yeah, them versus Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely with you on that. Winnipeg dominated.
No, it wasn't even close.
Besides Game 3. That Minnesota won 6-2.
And
Winnipeg dominated that series, and Minnesota.
That was just a 4-minute stretch of that game 3 where Winnipeg kind of had a brain fart.
Yeah.
And Minnesota scored, what, 3 or 4 times in that span? But no, aside from that, Winnipeg looked very dominant. Connor Hellebuyck looks like a top caliber goalie in the NHL after last year everybody kind of had their second thoughts about him, like, is he really going to be the type of guy that can be a Vezina candidate
and be the leader in the league, and he was top 10 right now.
Offense is scoring, the defense is playing solid, you know, they just got to avoid injury, I think, at this point.
That's really the big thing, and assuming they play Nashville in round 2, woof.
It's a damn shame that we have to experience Nashville and Winnipeg in the second round instead of the conference final.
Yeah,
but that's the way the NHL wants to work with their formatting. They think it's great. They think it's perfect. They think everything's great with the league, when really, in all actuality, they don't listen to their fans. And if the fans really were a factor, they'd say, give me Winnipeg and Nashville in the conference final any day of the week. I would rather see that than a Vegas, Nashville, or what have you. I don't think Vegas can hang on to their little, you know, magic that they had earlier in the year. And San Jose might be the only team that can contend with either Winnipeg or Nashville. But I mean, the best thing would have been Winnipeg, Nashville in the conference final to go to the cup final.
Oh my God.
But the NHL continues to insist that everything that they do is perfect and everything that they have is really, really great. Just grand, but really it's crap.
Yeah.
horse you
always
want. I really I'm gonna love the series between Nashville and Winnipeg.
We're all gonna
shame
love
that
it.
It's in the second round.
Yeah,
that series should go seven games just because both teams are exceptionally good. Pecorine,
it's a very even matchup,
right? For Nashville, they've just got to continue to get Pecorine rolling like he has been all season long.
Yeah,
I mean, in my opinion, I think Pecorine should be the Vezina winner because I think he's just been the best goalie, period.
Yeah,
finally it's coming to him. Now it's just he's got to perform like he did last year in the playoffs, and I think he's done fairly well this year. I think he had one game where he might have had a couple of shaky goals go against him, but I mean, Nashville should close it out today. I don't think this series goes seven games.
Yep.
You know
that game is at 7 tonight.
7 o'clock.
Colorado game 6. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, Nashville should win. They should move on, and then it goes to Nashville for game 1 against Winnipeg, and that series is going to be a lot of fun.
That's going to be a great series.
You get two great home atmospheres going against one another.
Yep.
I mean, that should be a series where the home team should win each of those games.
It would be Smashville versus the Whiteout. That's going to be fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
Are you expecting Pittsburgh to close it out against Philly today too?
I don't know. Based on the game the other night, Philadelphia fought really hard against Pittsburgh to really even tie the game and then eventually win. I mean, if they could put up an effort like they did the other night in Pittsburgh at home, they haven't played well in front of their home crowd at all in this playoff, but Philadelphia, I mean, they're certainly not a team that's dying out. They're not a team that's going to die out easily. They're a team that is definitely going to fight till the end. Surprisingly enough, because with the first few games of the series, they looked really, really, really just awful, period. Just bland and straight out downright putrid. But
game 5 was the first game where it was good.
Right.
It was good. It went right down to the end.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, it's about time we've seen something like that. So I'm going to say Philadelphia pulls this one out and forces a game 7. I wanted to see a game 7 with these two teams. It's unfortunate the way that it's played out already. But at the same time, I think Philadelphia's performance the other night was enough to force, of course, this game. And I think in front of their home crowd, I think they'll find a way to get it done and force game 7. I don't know who's going to win game 7, but I mean Pittsburgh certainly has the advantage. Yeah.
You got Boston, Toronto as well. That series is going 6. Toronto won last night. I'm telling you,
it's going to happen again between Boston and Toronto, where Toronto's down 3-1.
It almost happened last night. I was sitting in the WBEN studio. We're doing my normal Saturday shift. I'm watching the game. I see it's 2-0 Toronto, then it's 2-1, then it's 4-1 Leafs. Next thing I know, 4-2. I'm like, okay, 4-3. Is this happening again? And then Toronto held on.
It's got to be game 7. It has to be game 7. It's not game 5, not game 6. It has to be game 7.
It's funny how it almost happened that way. But game 6, I believe it's tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night.
So that's on Monday. And then you have Washington-Columbus as well. The home team finally won a game. It's another overtime one.
I thought Washington was dead in the water after games 1 and 2.
They didn't look the same.
Like, they looked like a team that was not them all year. Columbus took advantage. They won game 1 and 2. Then Columbus over the past two games looked like, over the next two games looked like they were not the team that they were. They looked dead in the water. And then yesterday's game was a good game between the two. Both teams fought really hard, and finally Washington came out with the win. So I think that one's still going to 7. Columbus seems to be a team that is not going to go out easily. Sergei Bobrovsky is a really good goaltender. They've got some good weapons on the blue line with Werenski and Jones. And up front, the only problem is they need more scoring from their secondary guys like Cam Atkinson and, Matt Calvert.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of players that you need to have scoring from. Those are your depth guys, and they're not getting it from those guys. Brandon Dubinsky hasn't been really all that noticeable this playoff. I mean, Columbus is a team, when they're rolling, they're rolling. They're going to have some really good offensive weapons. I mean, good scoring from top to bottom. And they haven't gotten it this series. They need to get it in game 6 in order to stay alive.
Want to talk just a little bit of Sabres real quick as well, because it was announced, I believe yesterday, Ryan O'Reilly is a Lady Bing finalist.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, that's not a surprise. He took one penalty the whole year.
Yeah, and it was a coincidental, like, matching minors.
Yeah.
So, even then,
realistically, he did not take a penalty the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
So And for all the talk about him that the Sabres should trade him because he lost his love for the game, whatever, he's still a finalist for a major award in the NHL that he may very well win with what he did this year.
And being on a team that was so bad.
And being
all
on a team
year.
That was terrible, the worst team in the league.
He still put up 61 points.
61 points, best faceoff man in the league. Set the NHL record for most faceoff wins, and he's going to win the trophy that pretty much rewards that.
He's already won it once. He's going to win it. He might win it again. Very
so
well.
Why should the Sabres trade him? But
well, there's reasons.
But I want to go into Rochester real quick too, because they're down 2-0 to Syracuse. Mm-hmm. Games 1 and 2 is Friday and Saturday night. Syracuse won game 1, 6-2, pretty dominant performance. Game 2 was pretty close, 6-5. Syracuse got the win though. Have you been able to check out anything with the first two games?
Not really. But I mean,
it's
very hard. But it's certainly concerning that the Amerks have dropped the first two games of the series and giving up 6 goals each time.
Considering it's a best-of-5 series.
Listen, Linus Allmark is a very good goaltender. I'm not worried about Linus Allmark whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm not worried about
anything like that. I'm more worried about the defense because, I mean, yeah, you've got guys like Gooley Nelson and you've got Will Borgen, who probably should be playing a lot more. But, I mean, you look at that lineup, you look at everything else with them on the blue line. Their blue line kind of is meh. I mean, you got Andrew McWilliam playing.
Yeah.
You got Stuart Percy playing. It's just kind of like, you know, you've got your young kids and you got your options there that are going to be futures in Buffalo. But at the same time with Rochester, you look at the rest of the blue line there and you think, oh God, I mean, outside of those top 3 or 4, there's really nothing else for this team.
Casey Nelson didn't even play in game 2.
Really?
Yeah.
That I did not know, so that's a surprise to me.
Yeah, you had McWilliam, Tennyson, Percy, Redmond, Fadoon, and Gooley.
Ooh.
In game 2. Percy didn't play game 1, so he took the spot.
So why is Casey Nelson not playing? I don't know. Why is Will Borgen not even playing? I mean,
yeah, he really only played like a few games left in the
season. Will Borgen in the last few games that he got in when he signed his entry level contract in the ATO that he had with the Amerks, he's looked pretty decent.
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely not a guy that's going to put up a lot of points, but he's definitely a guy that can be a good two-way defenseman. He skates really well in both ends of the ice. He's very reliable, and he's a minute muncher. I mean, the Amherst should be playing him, but, I mean, again, for a kid that's coming in, transitioning from college to pro, it's probably not that easy for him. And, I mean, I guess they don't want to mix and match and screw with the lineup too much. I just don't know.
I don't know either.
I would rather see Borgen in, but of course that's
maybe we'll see bias.
Maybe
we'll see him in for game 3. Maybe. Which is on Wednesday.
I mean, they need a win. They need to figure out a way to win. Because, I mean, Syracuse is a good team, but they're certainly not a team that's unbeatable. I mean, the Amherst did really well against Syracuse this year. They maybe didn't win all the games, but at the same time, they're still winning games against them. And in the two games here, it's certainly concerning that they're not scoring all that much, and it's concerning that their defense isn't really helping out Linus Allmark. So, you know, let's see if they can rebound in games 3 and 4 on home ice, and maybe the Rochester fans can give them a nice boost of energy. But at the same time, you got to figure a way to not allow them to put the puck on net and get goals.
Okay. We're going to talk a little bit of football now, not draft related. Louis back with us. UCF. Their team football team went undefeated this year.
National champions, baby.
They are the national champions technically, and they are telling everyone that they are. They're having a banner put up and they're giving out rings. How awesome is that?
It's the best troll job in sports this year. They should win an award for it. It's awesome. They made legitimate championship rings.
Yep.
They had a parade at Disney World. They are putting up a banner at their stadium.
Yeah, they have.
They're full on embracing this. It's not just a Las Vegas Knights Twitter thing where they're just joking around. They're fully committed to this, and it's awesome. You know, if the NCAA can get rid of national titles, the fact that a team is creating themselves one is awesome, and it's based on them not even getting a look in the playoff, despite going 13-0. It's awesome. I think it's fantastic, and a lot of people like to go on the quality of wins they had, but a team like Alabama, how many really good teams did they beat this year? They couldn't even beat Auburn, a team that eventually got punished for beating Bama by having to go at Georgia in the SEC championship game. It's awesome because they're totally creating this, and there's nothing the NCAA can do. It's not like they can punish them. This is totally created in-house from UCF.
Yeah,
it's the best troll job in sports.
It's amazing.
They're national champs. I'm embracing it.
Embrace
the
UCF
people's college
as the
football
national champions.
It's great.
I love it so much. So the NFL schedule got released Thursday. There's always a lot of speculation on, the Bills, what's their record so far and things like that. I saw an interesting article, and I want both of your guys' takes on it. Ed Sheeran apparently affected the way the schedule was made this year.
Yep.
With his tours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Brayton, you saw this.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
I mean, Ed Sheeran definitely is not liked by many around the music world, the entertainment world, and apparently world. I don't know what the problem is because I'm not really all up on music and I don't really know all that stuff about Ed Sheeran, but at the same time, it's just like, cool. The NFL is going to have to figure that out. I don't know.
I just find it really funny how you got one guy who, based on his touring schedule, affects how you have to make your sports schedule, your NFL schedule, at places where your players play at.
Boo-hoo.
I find it hilarious how something like that happens. That's the first time I've ever seen something like that.
He's got some good songs, though.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
I don't know too many of them, so don't ask me.
Yeah. any early predictions for the Bills as of right now, based on the schedule being
is AJ McCarron the starting quarterback?
Depends on who they draft.
I guess that's what we're basing it off right now until Thursday. You know, when everyone loves to do the win loss columns right after the schedule comes out, and
hey, that's Howard's favorite segment.
Exactly,
he loves doing picking the Bills.
Yeah, come on.
And when I was just scrolling through, based on the roster they have now, Pro Football Focus ranked three positional groups of Buffaloes dead last.
Yeah,
I believe it was linebacker, receiver, and quarterback.
Shocker.
Again, quarterback and receiver are subject to change. Who knows if they draft a receiver? Apparently, they're interested in Dez Bryant, according to ESPN. Because Baltimore and the Giants are out on Dez, so maybe the Bills bring him in. But right now, just based on the depth chart that shows a lackluster, not really talented roster, and I don't see this team right now. I know I said the same thing, though, about the Bills last year. I thought last year's team, after they traded Darby and Watkins, and they kept Tyrod Taylor, I thought that team was probably at best a 5-6 win team, and they ended up pulling off 9 wins. So.
Yeah.
And they made the playoffs. And I'm going to double down on it now, though. The roster they have right now shouldn't win more than 5-6 games. Again, though, they could bring in Dez Bryant. Josh Rosen could be drafted, and suddenly he's Rookie of the Year candidate. I mean, a lot of things can change, but right now...
Because Josh Rosen is the guy that is probably the most ready to step in away and start in the NFL.
If they drafted Josh Allen, I'm going to say that they're scheduled. I'm still going to go with their win-loss. So they're around 5-5-11, but because I don't expect Josh Allen to play that much.
But McCarron would be the starter if that's the case.
Yeah, and that's the case.
Peterman might be your second quarterback, too.
Could be. Especially based on what I just said with the roster, the timeline for Josh Allen in Buffalo meets more in 2019, where they have $90-plus million in cap space they can build around him at this point. But I'm not throwing Josh Allen to the Wolves with this roster.
No.
Especially you lose Incognito and Eric Wood on the offensive line.
And you trade Cordy Glenn.
There's not a lot to offer here, and people don't like Josh Allen as it is. I don't want a David Carr situation in Houston with Josh Allen here. But if it's Rosen or if it's someone, Darnold, that can make more of an impact day one,
or even Mayfield,
I might be subject to maybe give them 7 wins, 8 wins,
depending on how good he is. I'm going 7-9 right now, and that's based on the fact that they're going to draft likely a Josh Rosen or a Baker Mayfield, and they're going to trade up to do it. So my early prediction would be 7-9. But if they do draft a guy like, I'd say, Lamar Jackson or a Josh Allen, I'll probably be inclined to lower that because AJ McCarron more likely would be the starter.
Even Lamar Jackson, I'd be more suited to give them
I think there,
a better
there's gonna,
look, outlook.
I think there's going to be some growing pain. There's going to be right. some growing pains but, with him. But when yeah. you start to build around Lamar Jackson,
ways,
then you're going to start to see him yeah. take off.
There's ways to harness his talent while he's developing as a passer. You can yeah. still make a big impact with him on the field. It's kind of like Cam Newton, his rookie year, really wasn't a fully developed passer, but he's still a dynamic runner.
Yeah.
And you know, you can use him in play action, kind of like the Cowboys did with Dak Prescott, make things easier for him as a passer. I'm not very concerned with Lamar as a passer. In between the numbers, he was one of the more accurate quarterbacks.
Yep.
And on third down, he was really efficient. I think he took a big step up as a passer in his final year at Louisville. But even if he needs some time to better, you know, work his mechanics and his footwork, his stance is a little too thin. But McCoy and Lamar Jackson in the backfield running maybe option plays, that's scary. And
that's
you can be really creative in that offense with Lamar Jackson and McCoy. So even that would be more enticing than Josh Allen.
My guess is still that Rosen's the guy that they're going to target. Right now the top four, for what I believe the Bills' top four is Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson at three, and then Josh Allen at four.
I mean, they're apparently interested in everyone. So
talks about Sam Darnold potentially dropping as well.
I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. I think the Bills, their prize quarterback would be Sam Darnold. I think that Darnold won't be an option for them because I think he'll be taken. But at the same time, if he's available and they find a way to get up, I think he's the prize. I think that they see him as the top guy. After him, who knows? It's a crapshoot. You could say Josh Rosen is the guy. Josh Allen's the guy. Baker Mayfield's the guy.
There have been reports about all of them. Apparently, Rosen was the apple of their eye. They've really liked Allen, according to some people.
And then
there were scouts at Mason Rudolph's pro day, so it could be Rudolph. They've been tied to
they're
all
doing
of them.
Their,
they've had
the,
talks
the
with Baker
about,
Mayfield
yeah,
more
the
than
thing
of, like
the
twice,
thing that's great
times.
About that is that they're doing their due diligence.
WGR,
they are doing their homework. They are getting info on every guy.
Right.
They are looking at all of their options so that they can narrow it down.
There's been guests on. Fantastic. That have said every single one of them is the favorite to be a Bill. So
yeah.
it's
that just shows that they're doing their homework.
I think
maybe it's none of them. Maybe it's Kyle Uletta.
Oh God, stop!
Smokescreen season.
No, I think as the days before the draft come, Tuesday, Wednesday, early Thursday, I think we're going to start getting those names like, oh, the Browns are set on a quarterback, like this quarterback.
Yeah,
or you know the Jets. Depending on, you know, who the Giants take, are going to take this quarterback if they're available. If not, they're going to take this guy. It's just there's going to be reports from big name guys that come out. There's going to be things that will reportedly be said. Because, I mean, there's been instances where guys have been told, hey, you know, two or three days before the draft, you're our guy. We're taking you at this position or what have you. But, you know, I think we'll hear that. And I think that we'll get a better picture. And then, you know, the Bills can then go to work and see what they can do.
Exactly.
Brayton, Lou, thanks for joining me on the Leftovers podcast.
No, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, you're welcome. All right, but that's going to be just about do it. Wednesday, Derek and I will be back. We're going to talk complete draft, complete preview, everything. Thursday's round one, Friday's round two, Saturday. Friday's rounds two and three, day two of the draft. Saturday's day three, rounds four through seven. Saturday is also NHL draft lottery.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Ooh. Maybe the
Sabres
going to
take another L on
one.
That one?
Maybe the luck of the lottery will be on the Sabres side this time.
Yes, let's hope. Let's
still salty about the last one.
The last two.
Get a top three pick. Just win
just
a top
do,
three
do
pick.
Top, yep. get top three. Exactly.
Preferably but that's, number one.
Yeah. That's going to just about do it. We'll see you Wednesday, Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer will be back. I'm Frank R. Curry. Follow me on Twitter, at Frank R. Curry. I'll have the spelling in the description. Follow Brayton on Twitter, at BJ Wilson, WGR. Follow Louie on Twitter, at DB Sports Talk. And follow WGR's 550. Check out their on-demand section, Howard Jeremy, Chopin Bulldog, Nightcap with Ryan Gates, Instigators, John Murphy Show.
It's now One Bills Live.
Yeah. But we'll see you later, Leftovers Podcast.